For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast that is confused as to why Nick Foligno's debut in Chicago is getting all this media attention. It's strange, it's weird, but it's also secondary because tonight is all about Doom! Oh, Mark, it's time to open the Hurt Locker. It's time to feel vulnerable. It's time for our seasonal Doomcast, and I can't think of anybody I'd rather be Doomcasting with than you, buddy.
I am known for my Doomish abilities.
For those of you that don't know the gimmick, last podcast we did the Puppies and Rainbows, What If Everything Works. This podcast, we're going the other direction. We're going to talk about everything bad that could happen to derail what might be a promising Stars season. We're going to get it all out there so fans can start to process on day one, so that when the inevitable catastrophe hits, we're already starting to cope, right? We just don't want to be hurt again. We've been through the Fabian Brunstrom era. We've been through Sean Avery. We've been through bankruptcies, and we're going to protect ourselves this time. We're going to put our hearts in a tight lockbox and make sure nothing bad happens, I think, is the goal for tonight.
Yep. I'm all with you. And we might as well start with the biggest issue out there.
Doom! Do we have to say doom, right? Before each prediction?
No. I think you have to start at the top. There's been a lot of talk in the offseason about Miro Heiskanen and his pushing to improve his offense. I think last year that we saw that he did improve his offense, but it was somewhat at the expense of his defense. His numbers were the worst of his career. And the question is, can he raise the level of both and get himself in the Norris competition? And if you're looking at a potential downside, I think the answer is maybe no. And if how does he carry Ryan Suter?
I was going to say, right, it's not, because the thing about Miro is it's not just that we would like to see him get into the Norris conversation because he's a great player and we're great fans and we love Miro. Those are all true. But this is a team, this is a defensive unit that, to a degree that I think we don't necessarily always realize, is sort of banking on Miro being that guy. We've been so spoiled for his career to this point that when we're projecting the Stars defense, it's one of those baked in assumptions. Oh yeah, well, Miro will be good enough, not just to be a top five all world defenseman, but to be a top five all world defenseman with Ryan Suter as his partner playing his off wing. And yeah, doom starts with Miro, not just not being good, but just not being excellent. Right.
Right. And, I mean, you go back and you take a look at the career of Miro Heiskanen, and you really have to say that maybe the renaissance so far was his pairing with Jamie Oleksiak, which didn't last all that long, to tell you the truth. And other than that, he's been required to carry some pretty heavy baggage.
Yeah. And I mean, in the case
of Roman Polak,
literally very heavy. That guy was like 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm gonna doom you one further. And I think you can extend that to the entire defensive group, right? Like, think about when we talked last podcast about all of the ways that could break right. Lundqvist played 60 games and will be better. He's putting on muscle. And Thomas Harley was a bona fide number two defenseman during his 19 games plus playoff cameo. Well, 19 games is not a definitive sample size. And Nils Lundqvist lost his job before the end of the season. So we're talking about the defense, and I will see your what if Miro isn't a Norris candidate, and I will raise you a what if the continued development of young defensemen that we're just all, writing in pen doesn't happen exactly like we expect it to. What does that defense look like?
Right. And what we're really talking about is, know, the renaissance of the old Esa Lindell / John Klingberg.
Another guy who had a down year and we're just all assuming is going to pull it together.
Right. And we're thinking that the downside to Esa is that he can't get the puck out of the zone without just rimming it around. Mm-hmm. And the thought is that if you put him with Lundqvist, Lundqvist can at least get the puck out of the zone. And so there's some kind of balance to that pairing. And if you take a look at some of the numbers on the microstats for Lundqvist, he's very good in the offensive zone, but the transition part of his game isn't necessarily one of his major strengths. And no, so you haven't really fixed that problem by putting those two together.
And it's also not, it's reductive to say that, well, if you have one guy that does the offense good and one guy that does the defense good, you can put them on a pairing and everything will be fine because one guy does each good, right? Well, it's not like you have to get to 20 good points, right? And it doesn't matter how you get to those good points. You have to have a level of competence across the board at each, you know? Yeah. So I just, the defense, as positive as we can be about its upside, I think lost in the celebration of its upside is the potential floor of the group as well. We've, you know, kind of indirectly referenced it, but, you know, let's just say, what if the Dallas Stars get, you know, versus the Vegas Golden Knights closing moments of game two, Ryan Suter, right? And what if they get, you know, 31-year-old, 6'6", 222-pound Yanni Hakava? Like there are ways that it could go well. There are ways that it could go not well.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about is, you know, the other line that we haven't really talked about is Harley being paired with Yanni Hakanpaa. And you can, again, say in theory this should work. But Harley's always been at his best when he's playing with somebody with a bit of an offensive upside. Mm-hmm. It was true in Texas, and I think his best moments were actually when he was on the ice with Miro Heiskanen. And you put him with Hakanpaa, who is arguably the least offensive defender that we have. And may work, but again, you're at a very high level saying, yeah, we're going to throw an offensive guy and a defensive guy together and they'll offset.
And it's also more of this, and this has driven us nuts, Mark. It's more of this thinking on the Dallas Stars. It seems to be this thing they do with their blue line where they think about how can we minimize our downside versus how can we put our best pieces in a position to be excellent. You know, it's the thinking that's, well, we need to, you know, Miro has to cover for Suter. And I guess it just makes sense that we'll put Harley in a position where he has to cover for somebody that's not as offensive. You know what I mean? This team doesn't seem to arrange their defensive pairings in a way that's like, well, what could we do to make just the best possible situation for our best players? It's always the, what can we do to use our best players to offset our not best players?
Yeah. And here, you know, it'd be very interesting to see if the Stars would mix up their pairs situationally. And I'd love to see some Harley Heiskanen in time when we needed to pull out some offense or we had some advantages that we wanted to exploit. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really done that as a group. And the only thing we really tried on the other end was that we put Esa Lindell with Yanni Hakanpaa. And so, yeah, we had an all defensive pairing and they got caved in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so that is, it's a very good solution.
And you know, on the last podcast, we might have pointed out that Hakanpaa was carrying an injury for those playoffs, and that might have had something to do with it. But this is the Doom cast, and there's certainly nothing to, you know, there is no hard information that tells us that it's going to go any better, again, especially against elite competition, especially against teams with speed.
Yep.
So yeah, I think any catastrophic situation starts with the Dallas Stars defense, as has feels like been the case for years now.
Right. And you take a look at the general philosophy. We re-signed Joel Hanley as our number seven defender. He's been very reliable. He kind of sucks the air out of the game, but He's getting up, what, 32, 33 years old now?
I was going to say, don't worry, KT will remove the air out of the game part in post, and it'll just kind of sucks.
But on the other hand, we had a player down in Texas named Ryan Shea who made the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup at the NHL level this year. The investments that the organization is putting in developing people is rewarding other teams, or at least they're reaping the potential rewards of players that have come through the Stars organization.
It certainly seems like there's a lack of creativity around the defense, and it could be a faith rewarded situation, and it could not be.
Yeah. And again, what we have a team that did not improve on the defensive end, unless you're looking at this potential upside of Lundqvist and Harley. And then it's like, hey, Miro's got another gear. Okay. Well, Miro's gear is pretty high already. How much more are you going to get out of that? At what point does this team get from the Western Conference Finals to be a Stanley Cup favorite, which a lot of outlets are saying they are?
Yeah. How does this group, what does this defensive unit in 2024, by the time the playoffs roll around, right? How is the Dallas Stars defense in 2024 meaningfully better than the Dallas Stars defense in 2023?
Yeah. And I mean, what's your answer? Is it better?
This is the Doomcast, Mark. So my answer is an emphatic no. My Doomcast answer is that this defensive unit is still over reliant on the excellence of Miro Heiskanen and on the assumptive growth of both Thomas Harley and Nils Lundqvist. And this offensive unit, this defensive unit is putting way too much faith in those three players' ability, not just to perform, but to overcome the limitations elsewhere in the positional group.
Right. And in order to get better, a lot of the potential upside that's been talked about needs to actually be seen on the ice.
Yep.
And you know, they're young, supposedly they're growing in their games, but until we see it, it's going to be hard to quantify. And there are some other things that are out there on the downside as we hit aging curves with Ryan Suter. We've seen that since the start of the contract that he has slowed down significantly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one more year, one less mile per hour skating, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going to have to make up for that somehow.
I mean, the thing about that, right, check in, mark your calendar, right? Check the power play time of Suter versus Harley, you know, 10, 15 games into the season. And that's probably going to give you, you know, if you want to answer how the defense is holding up, right? That's the best way to answer that question is probably to compare the ice time of those two people in those situations.
Yeah, or it looks like I think Lundqvist in the last preseason game was getting power play too.
Yeah,
so
I guess you're exactly right. It's, I guess, not Ryan Suter is the answer to that question.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Lundqvist's job to run with if he can take it, and then Harley will get a chance if that's not going as well as we hope it would. Let's finish off the defense a little bit here and talk goaltending.
I was going to say, if we're doomcasting and we started talking about the defense, let's now talk about the group that doomed defense is going to leave hanging all the time. And that's the Dallas Stars goaltending.
Yeah. And here, thank God we have Jake Oettinger. The potential downside is that he gets overworked just like last year, and he's going into the playoffs not as rested as he needs to be. And then he's playing every other game for hopefully a lot of games, and that wears him down.
I mean, right, the team, I think it was even Pete DeBoer in some of his preseason comments was very, you know, he was very candid about the fact that the original plan was to give Oettinger much more time. I think it may have been 12 games. Check the tape. Feel free to tell me I'm wrong. I'll accept it. But I remember DeBoer mentioned, I think it was something like they anticipated originally having Oettinger's workload be about 12 games lighter, particularly down the stretch. And because of the injury, you know, to Wedgwood down, you know, the injury, they couldn't get him off the ice. And I think because beneath Wedgwood, none of the options in Cedar Park were NHL ready. They were much more oh no backups than planned night off backups. And I think if we're doomed in the crease, it's going to be once again, because when the chips are down and the Stars need a point, there's no other option. And they're going to have to ride Ottinger way too much before they get to the point where the games really matter.
Right. And we're really talking about a situation where Ottinger is the number one and Wedgwood is a solid two. You know, this is not something like it's 1A and 1B.
Yep.
And then you go down to Cedar Park and Matt Murray got three games last year and was okay in one of them.
Yeah.
And just taking a look at the results that I saw in the preseason, it almost looks like Remy Poirier is moving more into a 1A slot down in Cedar Park than Matt Murray. And so you're talking about a guy who was playing excellently in the ECHL last year, and is he your organizational number three? Jim Neal always has some kind of veteran backup, and this year we're going in a bit naked.
And it's one of those things, right? Admittedly, third string goaltender isn't, if you're worried about your third string goaltender, you're probably in a pretty good situation. But I think we've made the point elsewhere, right? If you want to be a favorite, that changes the scale you're measured against. And if we were in the era of hope for the playoffs, hope for contention, then it wouldn't make as big a deal. But, you know, times change. Expectations rise. And if this is a team that's supposed to have legitimate Stanley Cup aspirations, the inability to maintain a goaltending battery like you want to is something to really worry about.
Yeah, because I mean, as much as it is a copycat league, who's out there writing in that you need to be ready for Aiden Hill to take you to the Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's everything builds. So we have a defensive core that has a couple of holes playing in front of a goaltender that may not have the backup the team wants, and things break wrong. That's a recipe for disaster, Mark.
Yeah, you start giving too many quality opportunities away, and even Ottinger is not going to save you. I mean, you don't want to set yourself up in a situation where you're like Connor Hellebuck, who's just having to save the team day after day after day because he doesn't have the support up front.
Or frankly, you know, a more familiar example, Ben Bishop. How many great games did Dallas ultimately waste away because they couldn't get Bishop the help and support that he needed?
Yeah, and every year we'd have a new number two, and that number two would be not good. Not good, Wes, not good.
It's not good. It's doom. It's doom. Now, it's even we can't possibly talk negatively about the forwards, Mark. Well, actually, spoiler alert, we can, but we're going to take a very quick sponsor break, fill some stuff in to really get ourselves ready to eviscerate what should be the beating heart of this Dallas Stars team. So just give KT a moment to pay the bills.
How about Ryan Hartman?
How about Ryan Hartman?
Good guy. Good guy. Love to see that intensity in the preseason.
I feel like there's a problem when you're intense in the preseason as a veteran. That tells you something.
Nothing like a healthy knee-on-knee contact that's completely unnecessary, huh?
That's Dallas Stars legend, Ryan Hartman.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, we had his rights for a couple days, right?
Couple of days. So, of course, pivoting to the forward group. And, Mark, nothing could go wrong with the forwards, right?
I have two words for you. Jason Robertson.
Jason Robertson.
Jason Robertson is no longer part of this podcast because there's no doom there.
There's no doom. We're just exempting Jason
Robertson. We're exempting Jason Robertson from doom.
The NHL exempted him from the Golden Generation ad campaign to start the first game of the season. Inexcusable. Inexcusable. By the way, just putting that out there, it is to run a Golden Generation promo and leave out, what was he, number four in the Hart vote last year, right? Unbelievable. The league is doomed. Doomed to the league.
In such a positive role model. So, yeah. Wonderful.
So, of course, the NHL completely forgets him, because that's what league in their right mind would want to promote a young, exciting offensive player that's grown season after season. And this is good, though. It's helping me channel my doom. OK, so Jason Robertson exempted. Then hit me with some bad news, Mark.
Well, I mean, your bad news, if you're going to start up front, obviously we have Roope Hintz, who's missed most of the preseason here. So, at a certain point, you have to start thinking, does Hintz just always get dinged up?
Yeah.
And the style of his game, the speed and the weight that he brings to it is pretty punishing on the body. And he might not be the classic power forward that Jamie Benn is, but there's a little wear and tear that's going on there. And he's right at the point where he's at his prime. So, if he can get a good healthy year or two in, then we'll be in great shape. But there have been dings, and he'll probably play a lot, but he may not always be 100%.
Yeah. And
your other side is Joe Pavelski. Joe Pavelski is what, about 45? He's going to start shooting his age on the golf course.
I was going to say, and Father Time is undefeated. So, wow, you have, Roope Hintz's is injury history and Joe Pavelski's age. You've officially doomed the NHL's best line. I bow to your pessimism, sir.
Well, and we also need to develop some defenders who can get the puck to the front of the net cleanly, so that we can get some of those great tips in the net.
Yeah, but I think you're right that the Dallas Stars offense for the last couple seasons has had a cheat code. And no matter what else was going on, no matter who was going, who wasn't going on any given night, you could throw that trio out there and pretty much it was an asteroid hurling towards the earth regardless of whoever the Stars were playing and whatever line they were lined up against. And what does this unit look like? I think it's the same argument we made when talking about Miro Heiskanen. The challenge for the Stars isn't, and I do think it would be way, even in a gimmick podcast like this one, it'd be too much to say, what if that line got bad, right? Because that's just...
No, it's not going to happen.
No, but again, at the level the Stars are trying to compete, what if that line was just good? Could be a problem for this group, right? Like, what if that line is just pretty good? What if that line is just, top 10 in the league instead of top one, and top one or two in the league? How does it change Dallas's offensive outlook if that line is no longer an unstoppable monster and just a regular monster?
Well, it's just one of those pressure releases right now, where there were certain games last year where some of the rest of the team had an off night and that line could just take over games.
Or they'd score, what, 20 seconds into the game, three times.
Right.
That's pretty easy.
Yeah. And all of a sudden the other team's on their heels and feathers are up in the air and we're skating.
And you all of a sudden you just have to pay attention to them. You have to game plan around them. You have to treat them like, they never had, it felt like they never had an off night when it mattered. And Dallas had such an advantage in every other matchup, because no matter what, you better do everything to stop that line, even at the expense of other things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think the doom side of this line is, what if they aren't the best in the league? Because with Bergeron retiring, that's where everybody else is putting them.
Yeah. It's in a world in which Connor McDavid returned to his home planet, right? Jason Robertson would be a perennial MVP candidate at this point in his career. Not just a perennial second place to Connor McDavid, as much as it pains me to give an Edmonton Oiler that kind of flowers, but it is what it is. That's the generation we live in. But yeah, like you said, it's what happens if that line isn't, superfluous.
So what happens after the Renaissance?
Oh, it gets doomier. It gets doomier. Have you ever seen a line that is just like, I just imagine the regression monster just peeking his head above the hedges, watching the Renaissance line, because we've got a combination of, you know, Jamie Benn turned back the clock in a big way. Evgeny Dadonov, as a, you know, mid-30-year-old, was added to the lineup and made an impact. And then Wyatt Johnston, as an 18-year-old, you know, 18, 19-year-old rookie, came in. And, you know, this is one where, what if Jamie Benn isn't a near point-a-game player again? What if Dadonov is more Hemsky Season 2 than Hemsky Season 1? And what if Wyatt Johnston goes through a perfectly understandable, normal NHL phenomenon of a sophomore slump? What does that line look like if one, two, or three of those things happens?
Well, what it looks like is broken up. And so is that a dependable second line? They certainly were at the end of last year. And, you know, it's a matter of you keep riding what works until it doesn't work. And yep. I think that's one of the reasons why Dadonov was brought back. I think there was a hope that the youthful energy would keep going within Ben. You know, having other larger players around would stop him from necessarily having to be the enforcer that he put in the enforcer role that he'd put himself in. Mm-hmm. And yep. So, yeah, there's all that great reason for hope. I can understand why we're riding that line, but there are potential downsides, and they aren't all that far away.
No, and especially without the veteran leadership that the Stars had at the bottom of the lineup last season, right? There's no Luke Glendinning to come take a pivotal game faceoff and bail this group out, right?
Yeah, and you're going to see you're probably going to see Ben on the penalty kill a bit more.
Because can he do that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think he'd probably try and keep him to about 14 minutes a game, which means that they're probably not a true second line. They're probably you're probably talking about a 2A and a 2B between that line and Tyler Seguin's line, and then maybe a fourth line that's running 11 to 12 minutes a game. So yeah, Pete DeBoer likes running lines. And he wasn't able to do that last year. I'm sure he's planning on doing it this year.
And I, you know, we'll just keep the doom rolling down the lineup. We're now sort of falling into the same trap we did with the defense and talking about Tyler Seguin as somebody that just automatically we can assume is going to, you know, he was, you know, 20 goal scorer last season. Not bad. Mm-hmm. But what if he does Dallas need him to be more, and can he be?
Well, and you know, if you read David Castillo's piece in D magazine, you know, there's potential big upside. He's coming into a season completely healthy and with a bit of a history of being healthy now for the first time in a long, long time.
Yeah, and there's a playoff run too, but we're not doing, you know, he looked fantastic when he did spot duty in the playoffs when, you know, when Pavelski was down. But Mark, we're doomed tonight.
So. Well, no, I understand, but I'm yeah, sometimes you have to go to the peak in order to hit the valley.
That's fair. That is the true mark of a doomsman right there. Is knowing you gotta build it up first before you tear it to the ground.
I mean, you still have unanswered questions there. You have Matt Duchene, which is a complete, you know, unanswered question. He's popped around from place to place. His numbers always seem to look good. But what does Dallas have that lets him fit in?
Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, he didn't get bought out in Nashville because he was a consistent performer every season they had him.
And there have always been rumors about what his presence is in the locker room. I probably discount that quite a bit. But yeah, you're right. Nashville was going into a rebuild, and that contract was too expensive for them to want to keep him around. And if he was contributing at a high enough level, they probably do keep him around.
Yeah.
And then you throw those two together with Mason Marchment, who has his own set of questions, where we have one season with Florida where he just tore things up. A shortened season, and then a beginning of a season last year where he got off to a great start. But since then, it's been it's not been ideal.
Yeah, the doom cast with him is what if he is second half of the season Mason Marchment, and all of a sudden we're right back to where we were last year, which is the Seguin line lacks a, you know, unless Sam Steele steps up, or maybe it's Ty Delaney, you know, all of a sudden it's Seguin, you know, maybe he's got a running mate in Duchene, right? But all of a sudden it's Seguin and question marks trying to forge an effective third line, and all of a sudden DeBoer can't roll lines again, and all of a sudden the team is much more susceptible to slumps or regression or problems higher up in the lineup, and what was supposed to be a vaunted forward group turns into a little bit more of a problem. And again, it's at the margins and in the crowd that the Stars are running. It's not that the risk is Dallas's offense is suddenly going to be garbage, right? Like that's not the risk. It's that what if they're just good? What if they're mediocre, right? Like that could be enough to put this team on an entirely different trajectory than the one people are predicting for it right now.
Yeah, and you know, at a certain point, we have to talk about expectations and the problem with expectations, because you know, if you're expected to be a Stanley Cup contender and you face adversity, then you have more pressure on yourself to try and achieve that level. Whereas if you're coming in and you're expected to be fighting for a playoff berth and you hit a little downstretch, but you still see that you're close enough to the line, yet you use that as motivation to move forward. So your entire psychology and mindset changes.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a team that, looking in this era, whenever there has been talking about peaks and valleys again, whenever there's been a peak, whenever we've started to have conversations about, you know, they finally made the playoffs again in 15-16 and then didn't the next year, right? They reached the Stanley Cup final in 20 and then didn't follow it up in 2021. They lost in the first round. You know, this is a team that hasn't really been able to string two good seasons together.
At a micro level, you take a look at this team, and how many times has Dallas been on a hot streak and had a big opponent come into the barn, and you say it's going to be the game of the season, and Dallas lays an egg.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team that has historically not dealt well with success. And now they're being, you know, they're in the conversation for the Stanley Cup. And that's a lot of pressure on a team that hasn't dealt well with success in the past.
It's a team that hasn't dealt well with success in the past. And it's a team that's going to have to figure more things out on the fly than I think we realize. You know, it's a team that's coming into a season with these major expectations, potentially having to, you know, in the best case, having to integrate two new defensemen full-time to the defensive core, plus, you know, however many forwards, right? This is a team it's not like this is a team that is going to, you know, that we're going to see the same lineup that almost beat Vegas, right? There's been some change. You can't always assume that things are going to work, right? You can't always assume that Pierre Turgeon is going to come in and be the perfect complement to Mike Modano and make the offense, you know, unstoppable, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that's lost some of the big penalty kill minute munchers that we had. Other people are going to have to step up and take that. We had some reliable face-off winning players on the team. Some of the younger guys are going to have to step up there. And this is also a team that, at the sign of things going wrong, is going to move Radek Fox up to the second or third line.
Doom! Nothing fixes a slump like that. And Mark, I'm going to give you the other bit about, you know, thinking about doom is, we've talked about problems. Let's maybe transition and start talking about some of the structural, you know, behind the bench front office parts. Is this is a team that's at the cap. And this is a team that's not going to be in a position to go get help if this stuff doesn't work out.
Yeah, you kind of think that they're going to have to do what they did last year, where they were jockeying people back and forth between Dallas and Cedar Park to try and build up enough cap space so that if they needed to make a move at the trade deadline, that they had enough spare cap in order to do that. And it's very likely that there will be at least one weakness that needs to get patched if this team's going to make a serious run, and they need to have the cap space to do it.
Yeah. And so we've got, let's see, we've got a defense over-reliant on a few critical pieces. We've got goaltending depth issues. We've got a forward core that is running away from the regression monster. We've got a balance sheet that doesn't give them a whole lot of room to solve problems Anything else we can feel bad about today, Mark?
Well, I mean, we have a coach who's historically been best in his first year, and his best in his first year was a Western Conference final.
we got peak DeBoer in first season, and now we may just get Pete DeBoer in season number two.
Yep.
Yeah. And you're right. The chemistry is, you know, it's the old dead cat bounce, right? We had a team that was instilled from Hitchcock to Montgomery to Bonus. We had a team that was committed to defense, a team that was committed to minimizing all chances against, a team that was committed to doing all the hard stuff. Then they still had those tendencies. Finally got a coach that let the leash out a little bit. What if some of that dedication, what if some of that attention to detail, what if being one more season removed from that defensive foundation starts putting a few more cracks in the game?
Yeah, we always get to the point where we're talking about the team identity. And at this point, I'm not sure if I know what the team identity is going to be for the coming season. So that's going to have to be worked out.
I mean, we know what it's supposed to be, right? This is a team that can play. This is a team that will check you. This is a team that will kill you on the rush. This is a team that will perform on special teams and score and kind of beat you in a lot of different ways. But as we've illustrated, success is fickle, right? Hockey, do that hockey. It's not always easy. So what if they hit one of those stretches where nobody can score and the power play goes cold? Do they have the defensive chops to start eking out a couple of slump busting 1-0, 2-1 wins if they have to?
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that you need to think about is that this is a team that built itself up with that defensive mindset. And so if things start to go a little south, how easy is it going to be to drop back to that defensive mindset and get away from the push forward that DeBoer is going to be wanting?
Absolutely. And what, you know, we saw without necessarily the lineup flexibility to change, you know, sometimes the way that you get a little bit more push is fresh legs or, you know, making a trade to kind of rattle the group. But, you know, if you don't have those, if you don't have those tools in your toolbox necessarily, you may just have to ride stuff out. And that could be a problem.
Yeah. And I mean, one more thing that I'm going to hit is Texas is a little weaker this year than they were last year. There are guys that were call-ups who had some experience who could come in and were at least somewhat known quantities at what they could potentially do at the NHL level. And what we have with the forwards is probably, you know, Maverick Bork, maybe Logan Stankoven, great guys. Yeah. They're probably going to be major contributors, but the question is that going to be something that they're ready for this year?
And also, and you can cross your fingers. It's all well and good if Dallas needs a guy to maybe plug in a top six role, and it's Bork or Stankoven having a good season. But you know, what if what Dallas really needs is a penalty killer to take some of the pressure off Jamie Benn?
Yeah, and you take a look. I talked about Ryan Shea earlier making the lineup or making the opening night lineup for Pittsburgh. Riley Tufte and Freddie Olofsson both made the NHL squad for Colorado. So there was some talent out there that other people saw. And again, Dallas played around with it a little bit, but ultimately isn't going to reap the benefit.
Yeah. And you know, as we talked, we mentioned the situation in the crease, and Dallas can't necessarily expect to find help the level they need on the goaltending side of things. You mentioned this last season, you know, there were a couple of names of defensemen in Texas that really impressed you that aren't around anymore. I think, you know, there are a couple of prospects on the forward side, but as good as he looked at points during camp, I don't think Bichel is a call-up risk anytime soon. It's either Joel Hanley or what if the team needs defensive reinforcement.
You have Gavin Bayreuther who came back, and Bayreuther was getting, you know, he played 30 some games for Columbus last year as a third pair guy. So, he's an NHL guy.
The point of the Doomcast, right? If you're saying, well, things will be okay because we have this guy that played 30 teams for an awful Columbus team, like that's not good.
No, I'm saying it in a positive manner, but yeah, that's what you're talking about. You don't necessarily have the up and coming skill on the defensive side other than Bixel, and He looked fairly decent in his time, but there's some things that need to be worked out there.
I'm going to date myself with a quote here, but why don't you try delivering the bad news in a good way?
I always tried to deliver the good news in a bad way.
I mean, that's the safest way. That is the safest way.
So what do you think? We make the playoffs this year?
I mean, are we still doing the gimmick, or are we going to close things out with a little bit of real talk?
Well, yeah, the season starts on Thursday, so let's hear what you got. What do you think about this team?
I mean, the through line of all of the bulk of our doom is, you know, we're worried about a performance dip from a 24-year-old top five in the league defenseman. So that's, it's not like Miro is in a corridor of pain, right? And then as well, Thomas Harley has had a pretty significant stretch. So I would say that this is a team, I think that they are every bit as much value for their, you know, they're one of the top five teams in the league. They will be absolutely, they should be murdering Colorado, competing for the top spot in the Central Division. And I hate that I have to say this because I'm opening myself up for so much pain, but like this team truly, especially when you account for the fact that we're in a cap era, this team reminds me of the 98, 99, 2000 vintage Stars, in that there are so few legitimate holes that we're worried about what might happen if our third line center is only a 25 goal scorer.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that this team is a wagon. This team can probably go top to bottom, toe to toe with any team in the league. And this team will have failed if they are not a strong Stanley Cup threat this season. I think that's how good the Dallas Stars are. And yes, there's a lot that, you know, there are opportunities for things to go wrong, but, you know, go back and listen to the cast and look at the levels of how many different things have to go wrong before this team gets into serious trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of view this as maybe the difference between Japanese or German engineering and Italian engineering. Last year's team, I thought, was much more solid, if you will. It had redundancies built in.
Okay.
It could run at high speed, not necessarily peak speed, but if something failed, it would still work. And this year's team, I think if something goes wrong, it's going to go disastrously wrong.
Mm.
And so I don't think that's going to happen. But if it does, it's going to escalate, it's going to landslide, it's going to build on itself, and it's going to be the end of the old guy era, and we're going to have to absolutely depend then on the Hintz Robertson era to take over.
The Hintz Robertson Johnston era.
Yep. And ultimately Stankoven and Bork and all Ottinger, this team's ready to reload, but it's still, you know, you're talking about a team that Jim Neal has built with multiple layers.
Yep.
And there are certain parts here where he's stretching out some of the older areas of the team, thinking that we can survive an aging curve. And bother time catches us.
Yep.
And cross your fingers that it catches the older Dallas Stars after this year, because if we can get through this year with the balance on this lineup as far as ages go, without much regression, this is definitely a Stanley Cup potential team.
Or at least even if either without much regression, or if the regression at the top end of the aging curve is offset by progress at the bottom, right?
Correct.
Like, you know, this team could have, if Johnston continues to develop, and if Robertson continues to develop, and if, you know, Delandria and Stankoven and Bork and Hintz to a certain degree, right? If there are enough guys on the bottom or, you know, early parts of that curve, that it's not so much that this team, and this is, you know, getting into why the doom is not quite as doomy, but this team could, it's not that this team can't have Jamie Benn slide in any way, shape, or form. They can, as long as other guys don't. And I think that to me is where I get the most hope is that you could take all the guy, you know, you could, you know, Pavelski and Ben and Sagan and potentially Duchesne, like you could take all those question marks. And for every question mark, you can find a, okay, well, yeah, maybe Jamie Benn slips a little bit. Will we even notice because of, you know, because of continued improvement? You know, Johnston's going to be a year wiser, a year stronger, a year larger. And, you know, Sam Steele had some press once upon, it's there are options here. And I think there is, I like what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying about if it goes wrong, it'll be catastrophic. But I think that's just because this team is so solid that for something to really rock them, it's going to have to be catastrophic. Because it just, you know, one or two problems, this team is going to shrug them off. They're too good.
Yeah. And you know, I think maybe there are some serious fans out there who might not have a problem if a few things goes wrong because that'll finally force the organization to bring in some of their top end talent and throw them into the deep end.
Yeah.
And you know, if that happens and that works, that might be more important than just having a good solid run with the team the way it is.
The best example is the playoff run Thomas Harley just had. And,
right, exactly.
And Nils Lundqvist on a second power play unit in the preseason. Like this team needs those guys to do that. So I guess as fans, we're going to find out if they can.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with the Harley story is that because Harley spent all that time in the AHL, it's almost like, yeah, we marinated him just perfect. And so it takes away from the fact that he just stepped into that role and ran with it.
Yeah, it's one of those like, well, what if he was doing that a month earlier than, you know, what if he had done that for 20 games and say, yeah, it's you're exactly right. It's saying, well, this must have been, it's outcome-based decision-making, right? It must have been the right move because he played well when he finally got there, ignoring the fact that he very well could have played that well for much longer with the Stars. And oh boy, right? What might that have looked like?
Yep.
The important thing is he's here now.
Yeah, and that's ultimately the danger that this organization runs with. Is that they're much more comfortable playing with the toys that they have than they are with bringing in those brand new, you know, technologically advanced, super cool toys.
Yeah,
and that organizationally is going to hold them back until they can trust their development program to get talent out of Cedar Park earlier.
Yeah, I think we're seeing they put themselves into a corner in defense. We'll see about the forwards, right? Because I think you're right. I think that, and I'd even lump Delandry in. I would personally like for there to be more of an opportunity this season for the Delandria, Stankoven, Bork trio. I don't hate that there's not. Again, I keep coming back to, if this is a team that's competing for the Stanley Cup, then you know we need to see. There needs to be depth, right? We saw what happened in the playoff. But yeah, I think you're right. It is a little vexing that those guys don't have a little bit clearer of a path to contribute.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, you know, I think Smith has looked fine. I think that Steele has looked fine. So we're pretty solid down at the bottom end. So again, team looks good. I think the Stars are in for a great season, hopefully a great run through the playoffs. And enough of this doom. Let's get ready for the season.
Get ready. See you Thursday night. Thank you for all, as always, Mark, KT, thank you for putting this all together. Fans, for sticking with us, please remember, don't doom and drive. Take a little bit of a happy detox after listening to all this negativity. And can't wait to start covering an actual team playing actual games.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.